Wade Gershon with you on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Joined now by Brian Haney, play-by-play voice of Texas Tech Red Raider men's basketball, also baseball as well. And Brian is with us today. We wanted to get him on the air because we want to talk about the change at the helm of men's basketball at Texas Tech, as Tubby Smith leaving to take the Memphis job, and Chris Beard is the new head coach at Texas Tech. Brian, how are you, man? Good to talk to you.
Doing great, Wade. Thank you so much for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Really good down here. We've got the World Series champion Kansas City Royals that are still doing pretty well. KU men's basketball, we continue to do well this year. The Chiefs made the playoffs. You know, lots of good things going on down here. It sounds like some good things or interesting things happening at Texas Tech.
Yeah, you know, it's not the type of change you want to have coming off your first NCAA tournament run in 9 years. You finally get the program's fan base rejuvenated and tradition restored a bit, and then a coaching change occurs, and all of a sudden you're in protection mode to try and sustain momentum and not lose any defections in terms of player transfer and not lose some of that fan energy and enthusiasm that you built up in the last 6 months. But I really think Kirby Hokut, the Texas Tech athletic director, acted swiftly, decisively, and correctly in naming Chris Beard the next men's basketball coach replacing Tubby Smith. I think in this particular juncture, you needed to get a guy that not only had that upward-pointing arrow in terms of his ascension and projection as an NCAA coach, but a guy that wants to be here in West Texas. It's a unique place geographically to recruit to. You know, most of the kids you're going after are in the Metroplex area, which is 5 hours away, and you got to go past a lot of schools to get out here to Lubbock. And there's not a ton of talent in the West Texas, Eastern New Mexico area, and so you need a guy that knows how to recruit to this place. You need a guy that wants to be at this place. And I think Chris Beard checks all those boxes. And so in addition to being a guy that just took Little Rock to the round of 32, and we got to see them up close when they came to Lubbock and Tech handed them their first loss of the year in what was a 30-win season, we can see firsthand what he's capable of. And folks here that were around when he was a part of 10 different teams for a decade of assistant coaching and associate head coaching, I know the caliber of this man, the character of this man, and I think that has a lot of folks fired up about what the direction could look like under Chris Beard.
Let's go back a moment. Tubby Smith, I know you're close to him, work with him closely, of course, the last few years. He did a wonderful job of turning some things around there at Texas Tech, as you mentioned, making it to the NCAA tournament where they lost in the first round to Butler, much more competitive within the Big 12. And I think some people were caught by surprise that Tubby left to go to Memphis. There's some people who thought, yeah, this makes sense. He's going to Memphis, and others that thought, wow, now he's going to leave. Why did Tubby leave Texas Tech for Memphis?
Tough news to hear that. As you mentioned, he and I were very close, and I kind of felt like with the sophomore nucleus they had here at Texas Tech, this was a group that he would literally and figuratively grow old with and had kind of the thing rocking and rolling to the point where he could go to back-to-back-to-back NCAA tournaments and then see where his contract situation was at beyond that and see how recruiting had gone in the midst of that. But I think for Coach Smith, this was a chance on numerous levels, both personally and professionally, to put himself in what was a more ideal fit for the twilight of his career. And he may have 7-8 years left, who knows? But, right now, just looking at the next 5 years at Memphis, I think it's a situation where he feels like with their facilities out there, with the tradition and the fact that it's basketball first school, he can recruit a different type of player. He can navigate a much more navigatable conference, let's just put it that way, in the American, and get to the NCAA tournament on a perennial basis. I mean, folks forget that before he came to Texas Tech and inherited a really difficult situation down here, he never coached a losing season. I mean, this is a guy who has taken teams to the NCAA tournament at five different programs. The only other person that can boast that is Lon Kruger at Oklahoma. And now Coach Smith will likely add a sixth probably next season and be the only guy to ever do that. So for a coach that's clearly on the back nine of his coaching career but still has some final chapters to write and wants to cement that legacy. You know, he already won the 2016 John R. Wooden Legends of Coaching Award, but he's not yet in the Hall of Fame. I firmly believe he will be in the Hall of Fame, but what he does at Memphis, I think, will cement that Hall of Fame status, both in Springfield and in Kansas City at the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame and the College Basketball Hall of Fame. I think he'll be in both, and I think this gives him a chance, whether he's there for 4, 5, 6 years, to tack on a lot more wins, a few more NCAA tournaments, And all the while, he's closer to his grandbaby. I think his family will be happier, closer to where they're from. He's a Maryland guy and has, you know, property in the Carolinas as well, where he played his high school ball. And I think this gets him a little bit closer to his side of the country. And so you can't fault him for making that decision. He left Texas Tech basketball so much better than how he found it. And this was now a coveted job because of what he did here, in large part, in bringing back some of that tradition that was here in the Bob Knight era and James Dickey before that. And so for fans that were up in arms over his departure, hey, everybody's entitled to an opinion. But this is a coach who did a terrific job. Heck, he was the National Coach of the Year, according to the Sporting News. And I think you have to be thankful and grateful for what he did in getting this program back on target. And now you hope that Chris Beard can come in, keep these players intact, and keep this thing trending upward and onward, which I have total confidence he'll be able to do. But big fan of both those guys, and I wish Coach Smith nothing but the best, because he's truly one of the greatest men and human beings I've ever worked for or worked with, let alone his basketball coaching prowess. So you're certainly not going to hear me complain one bit about him leaving. He did what was best for him, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Brian Haney, the voice of Texas Tech men's basketball and baseball, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. So take me through the process, because I would guess that was a bit of a surprise when Tubby went to Memphis and the athletic department had to scramble maybe a little bit. Was the first and only call to Chris Beard? I mean, was he at the very top of the list immediately when Tubby decided to leave?
He was. And I don't know who else they may have vetted in a short amount of time, but I really believe he was the only guy they legitimately locked in on, and I think they felt like they had to act swiftly for a couple of reasons. One, you know, Beard had just signed a deal with UNLV and had been announced there about 2.5 weeks earlier, and it had taken a while to get the contract finalized, but he'd been out there since late March, and you know, he's trying to assemble his recruiting class out there. He's already got his staff in place, and I think the longer you allow him to plant roots out there, it's going to be tougher and tougher for him to leave. Secondly, the Coach Smith thing happened somewhat out of left field, and it happens at a juncture when a lot of other coaching hires have already been made. I mean, look at Underwood to Oklahoma State and Dixon to TCU, and you don't want to rest on your laurels too much or take too long with the process. I think it was about a 16-day search the last time around when they knew what they were getting into. Chris Walker is the interim coach and knew they had time to go out on the market and get best available. At this point, you know, you really got to hustle. And fortunately, as I said, with Texas Tech being a unique place in terms of geography and recruiting and all of that, they had a guy identified that checked all those boxes of young, up-and-coming coach, hot name right now, best years ahead of him, and his daughters are in Abilene. He's got three daughters. His heart is in West Texas. This is what he's called a dream job to others while he was here as an associate head coach and assistant coach. And heck, if you listen to his post-game press conference back in December when Little Rock came through here and played Tech, not that he was trying to get the job then, but he was sowing seeds in that post-game press conference about how much he loved Lubbock, how much the best years of his life were spent here, and how excited he was to see the resurgence of Texas Tech basketball. The flagship station that broadcasts our games, man, they're playing all those December sound bites the day he was hired, because you go back, you listen to it, you're like, man, it sounds like he already was hired the way he's talking. But it is important to have that fit. I think that's why you saw Tech hire Cliff Kingsbury 3+ years ago to be the head football coach. He gets what it takes to win and recruit in Lubbock, Texas, out here in West Texas. Same deal with Tim Tadlock, who's got the baseball program rocking and rolling at number 7 in the country right now. They just lost for the first time in 11 games last night and look like they're poised to possibly go back to Omaha. These are guys that are from this area, have coached and played at this area, poured their blood, sweat, and tears into this program. And I think at this particular school, with its regional fit, you need to have that. And that's something that Kirby Hocutt has identified as key. And it's not that it's the ultimate prerequisite, but this is a fan base that's had coaches come through here and not want to stay. There's a little bit of, man, how come nobody wants to stay and be our guy complex? And if you get a guy who's a Red Raider through and through, who may have not been born it but was bred it, I think that you know, enhances your chances of building a long-term winner with some continuity, some sustainability, and consistency atop the program. And they feel like they have that with Chris Beard. I mean, their hope is he's here for the next 10, 12 years, because he's called this his dream job. he was quoting Bear Bryant in his press conference saying, when mama calls and says it's time to come home, you come home. And he said, Texas Tech is my mama, and I'm happy to be home. So he's saying all the right things, and that's what folks out here want to hear. And I think they realized there's nobody else on the market that has the upward momentum trending like Chris Beard does, who also happens to view this as a destination job and this part of the country as home to him. And so when all those stars align, I think you got to push your chips to the center of the table and go after it with all you got. And that's exactly what Kirby Hocutt did. And his ability to pull this thing off in less than 36 hours was really a remarkable job.
When we're talking about this, I can't help but think about Kansas State University, and you may be going, well, that's a stretch. What are you talking about, Wade? Well, here is the connection. Kansas State University, Bruce Weber, a lot of fans aren't particularly pleased with what's going on with the men's basketball program. Brad Underwood, they're big fans of. Brad Underwood has been a lot like Chris Beard, said, hey, you know, I would love to be at Kansas State. That would be his dream job, and if he would be hired at Kansas State, as long as he performs well, he would be at K-State as long as he'd want to be. And there are a lot of folks here in Kansas wanting Brad Underwood to somehow K-State would fire Bruce Weber, hope Bruce Weber went somewhere else like Tubby Smith decided to do. The difference is, of course, Tubby had a much more successful season last year than Bruce Weber did. And so I think K-State fans have been wanting what you guys now have at Texas Tech, and that is you've got a young coach, an up-and-comer, a guy that wants to be at Texas Tech. It's not necessarily a stepping stone job. This is a place that this guy maybe will be there for, like you said, 10, 12, or maybe for the rest of his coaching career.
Yeah, and I think that's a good parallel, and I certainly have heard those Wildcat fans, you know, state that desire, and I get it. I think it makes perfect sense. And at the same time, I would be quick to point out, even though while Bruce Weber doesn't have that connection to Kansas State, you look at what he did even just 3 years ago and how quickly we forget. This was the Big 12 Coach of the Year. This is the guy that earned a share of the league title with Kansas. He's the former National Coach of the Year back in 2005. And I'll tell you this much, for your K-State listeners listening today, and this may not jive or resonate like you want since it's coming from a KU grad who's at Texas Tech now, but I had a lot of long conversations with Wyatt Thompson about this year, and I really feel like the freshman class that Coach Weber put out there for K-State this season will mirror what the Texas Tech freshman to sophomore transition looked like from Tubby's second year to Tubby's third year, which was this year that went to the NCAA tournament. All four of those sophomores really took that next step. And I see that in some of these guys they trot out there, whether it be Dean, Brown, Stokes. I mean, that group, I think you've got a tightly knit group that has nothing but just huge growth and expectation in front of them. And as Roy Williams always used to say, the biggest development in a player's career happens between his freshman and sophomore years. And those guys are bought in. I think this is a year where you really see the Cats take a step forward. And maybe that starts to get some of that Brad Underwood or lusting after whoever the next coach could possibly be talk to go away. I know it's not where folks want it to be right now, and I recognize the desire to have a guy that's made it very clear he wants to be a Wildcat, but I think Bruce Weber does too. And I would just tell some of the folks out there, and again, it may fall on deaf ears, but I think this thing's about to get better for them, and I think that we're quick to forget, you know, the job he did initially at the start of his career. So anyways, I think you make a good analogy, a good comparison there, and yet Underwood's now at Oklahoma State. They're right. Paying him a lot of money to be there, and they got great facilities. He's got a McDonald's All-American point guard coming back, and I think that's a dream that, you know, K-State fans need a table for a while, because he's going to do good things at Oklahoma State. And you're going to see good things, Wildcat fans, next season, I'm quite sure.
That's why a lot of K-State fans, I think they could have dealt with it a little bit easier if Brad Underwood went to a different conference. But now you're going to see him twice, and once in Manhattan. And so that's where, you know, Brad Underwood and Oklahoma State beats Kansas State a couple of times or three times. It's going to turn up the heat a little bit on the seat for Bruce Weber. Then on the flip side of that, though, if Bruce Weber beats Brad Underwood two, three times next year, and as you say, the improvement with that freshman class to the sophomores, then people are going to be a little bit more patient about it. So we were talking about Brad Underwood. That leads me on my next question, and that is the Big 12 coaching changes. Of course, we've already talked about what's happened at Texas Tech. Jamie Dixon going to TCU, back home in a way, his alma mater. And then Brad Underwood is going to Oklahoma State. What do you think about those coaching changes, and does that make this conference even tougher?
You know, I think it does. Now, losing Coach Smith, who had won a national championship, future Hall of Famer, all that, is a tough pill to swallow in terms of, you know, Final Four coaches and all that, and we hope Chris Beard becomes that at Texas Tech. But I absolutely think Coach Underwood at Oklahoma State is a great, great hire. And some of the pieces he brings back with what he should be able to recruit to there, I think make them hop back up in the middle of the pack. Not contending at the top of the conference, but it's a transitional year where of the 15 players that were first, second, or third team all Big 12, 12 of the 15 are gone, okay? So teams that were in that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 range, they can absolutely make a leap. Because you're going to see rosters at Iowa State and Oklahoma and some of these places gutted. West Virginia loses two of its best players. And you expect Bob Huggins to reload. But the point is, a lot of the faces of this league are gone. And I think that in both these situations, these guys have a chance to come in and win right away. And I look at Jamie Dixon at TCU. And that's, to me, that's pretty scary news for programs like Texas Tech, who had just surpassed the Frogs in the pecking order, who compete for some of the same kids out of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area. And now you get a former National Coach of the Year again in Jamie Dixon, who's got a brand-new arena, a $72 million upgrade there on the arena. He's got a roster with guys like J.D. Miller, Chauncey Collins. These are sophomores and freshmen that I think he can really build around. Kavar Shepherd will be a senior next year. He never really realized his potential, but he's got guys good enough to win now, and he'll be able to recruit to that situation better than Trent Johnson did. I think TCU becomes a player, not threatening Kansas at the top, but they become a player for that second tier and an NCAA tournament caliber team, which is something that obviously has eluded them in recent seasons. I thought that was a terrific hire. Mm-hmm. And I think with the arena he's armed with now, the location they're in, I realize there's still some apathy around the program, but that's the type of name that gets folks fired up and puts butts in the seats. And so I thought that TCU hire was as good as any. And I'll tell you, I mean, it sends shockwaves and ripple effects across the state to other Texas programs when you get a name like that. And not to call TCU a sleeping giant at all, but it's a program that clearly hasn't performed at the level it could. Mm-hmm. And you get a name like that as a future Hall of Fame coach, I think that puts them on a path to much more competitiveness and a whole lot more success. And the Frogs will suddenly become a program to be reckoned with within this conference.
With any coaching change, there's always the chance that, well, one, it's going to affect you recruiting-wise, whether there's already recruits that are coming in or have agreed to come in, or those that you had on the radar screen. And then, of course, sometimes there will be players that are on your team from a previous coach that, you know what, I don't see myself fitting in with this new style or the new coaching staff. Have you heard anything about that with Chris Beard at Texas Tech, anybody on the team that may leave or how it affects their recruiting?
You know, Wade, it's funny, this social media age we live in today, because you can see who's tweeting their loyalties and allegiances and who's staying quiet. And sometimes staying quiet means nothing at all, but then you've got the fan base freaking out if certain guys aren't tweeting, hey, I'm all in, go Coach Beard. You know, or you see players from other programs tweeting at guys saying, hey, you should come here and join up with me and all that. And that sends fans into a tither. I won't be naive here and sit and say nobody's going to transfer, because usually you see one or two defections. Usually at least one of them is a guy that stings, and that may be the case. But I will say this for Coach Beard. He came in, and anybody that listened to his introductory press conference on Saturday, I think he mentioned the importance of the players and the priority of the players and all of that no less than 17 times in his press conference. And I think he was sending a message loud and clear to the young men that were in attendance that day. It's, hey, I may not have recruited you, but I want to help you get to the next level. I want to help you sustain this success and take it one or two steps further, two rounds deeper in the NCAA tournament. And he gave all the credit to the players instead of the backbone of everything. And I think that was a targeted, calculated move on his part. I think he knows there's probably a guy or two that they might potentially be in jeopardy of losing. But at the same time, here's a young coach that can show them, hey, I just went to the round of 32 myself. We beat Purdue in overtime. Came back from 14 down with 5 minutes to go. I know how to get there. Stick with me. Keep building what you've started here. You've laid the foundation. Now let's take this thing even further. Let's go back to the Sweet 16. You know, let's do what they did back in James Dickey's era here, and Bob Knight. Let's have some of those types of runs. And I think that, you know, those kids eventually will come around to that. But this is a pivotal time, these next couple of weeks, and I'll be interested to see. There's probably, you know, two core players that you worry about the most, but I don't want to name names at this point because that's just speculation. But sure, there have been a lot of other guys that have said, hey, we're firmly on board with Coach Beard, and that gets folks excited because you don't want to skip a beat or have a misstep when it's taken 9 years to get back to NCAA tournament status, and that you'd hate to see a couple of steps back because of the coaching change. And that's what Chris Beard's trying to avoid right now.
Brian Haney, the voice of Texas Tech men's basketball and baseball. For Texas Tech, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. So let's turn our attention to the football program for just a quick moment. You mentioned Cliff Kingsbury in his fourth year coming up at the helm, a record of 19-19, 8-5 his first year, 4-8, then last year 7-6. What's the prognosis for Texas Tech going in this season? How much excitement is there, and how good can this team be competing in the Big 12 in Coach Kingsbury's fourth year?
Well, Wade, I think that there's definite expectation. Anytime you return what many feel is perhaps the second-best quarterback in the Big 12 Conference, some feel this will be the year where he proves he's the best. But Patrick Mahomes will be right there with Baker Mayfield of Oklahoma as one of your top two quarterbacks in the league. And he's got a big-time arm. This is a guy that, had he told MLB scouts he was willing to sign, would have been probably a top-5 or top-10 round draft pick as a pitcher. His godfather is LaTroy Hawkins. His father pitched in the major leagues with LaTroy. He's got a big-time gun. But his escapability, his improvisational skills, his playmaking ability when everything's breaking down around him truly makes him one of the most exciting players, I think, in college football. And we saw glimpses of that a year ago as a sophomore, but I think you're really going to see it on a big-time level this year. Now, the defense took big steps forward under David Gibbs' leadership a year ago. They've had a turnstile carousel of defensive coordinators over the last 7 years here, but this is a guy they hope to have some continuity with. It's a big deal when a DC comes back to Texas Tech in consecutive seasons. It hardly ever happens in the last decade. And they took a big step forward in takeaways. They were actually on the plus side of the plus-minus turnover margin. But total defense was still a struggle. You're still in the bottom five, D1, in terms of scoring defense, I should say. And so, trying to make strides in that regard to where your offense doesn't have to score 45 points to win a game is going to be key. But a big part of that is maintaining their success in the takeaway game, because 2 years ago, before Gibbs got here, they were one of the worst in college football in total defense, scoring defense, and the turnover margin. They at least improved one of those categories last year, and I think that'll be paramount to sustain that success in the takeaway department. But hey, you've lost obviously a 1,500 yard rusher in DeAndre Washington. You lose one of the best offensive linemen in school history in the Raven Clark. There's obvious offensive shoes to fill. If you remember Jakeem Grant, that little jitterbug, mm-hmm. who looks like Dante Hall out there, he's gone too. But Coach Kingsbury's recruited well. He's got a junior college All-American coming in at receiver that has the prototypical size and speed and everything and could probably catch 10 or 12 touchdowns this year. And I think you look on down the line and you realize this is a program that's always going to have great offense. They're always going to score 40-plus a game. It really falls on the defense's shoulders as to can they make that next leap to a 9-3 type program. And I think they can. But in this league, man, there's such a small margin for error. And we'll see what they do in non-con action going out to Arizona State. But I think it's a year to be looking forward to with some expectation, because the first 3 years of under Coach Kingsbury, you made a nice step forward, then had a 4-8 step back, then you jump back up this year with the bowl game. Now it's time in year 4 to really put it together. And I think that they feel like they can win 9 football games this year, which obviously a lot of folks would feel like is a sign that it's trending in the right direction.
Absolutely. Now, there was an opening at Texas Tech, as we know, and that was filled pretty quickly. There is an opening, I don't know if you've heard about this, at the University of Kansas, and I know you knew Bob Davis very, very well. Bob decided to step away from the microphone as the voice of the Jayhawks. First of all, I know you probably want to say something about Bob, because I tell you what, you know as well as I do that when he tells stories, man, they are some of the most interesting stories, make you laugh many times, and most of the time they're stories, at least the ones I've heard, that I cannot repeat on the air. Obviously you're a KU grad. You were on the baseball broadcast for about a decade. You were on the basketball broadcast for KU women. I know you're a fill-in for Bob over the years there at KU. And so I'm not asking you to reveal anything that you're going to do with your life, because that's not fair to you. But I did see that there is a groundswell of support for you. I know there's even a Facebook page saying, bring back Brian to KU. First, I guess, two-prong question. One, Just tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Bob stepping away. And then, two, maybe you're blushing right now. I can't tell. It's radio, of course. But about how I would imagine anybody in the right mind would be so tickled to death that there would be people that are clamoring for you to come back and be the voice of the Jayhawks. That must make you feel good.
It makes me feel great because it's home and it's family. And, you know, you leave home and you go on to other places and you make new friends and you take on new endeavors and ambitions, but your heart is always back home. And so certainly that does make me blush to hear you say that and talk about the groundswell of support. And I didn't know this was going to be brought up today, so you catch me a little bit off guard, but I'm not going to shy away from it. Obviously, that's a dream. But let's talk about Bob. I mean, this is a guy who in 32 years is the voice of the Jayhawks. You look at his accomplishments, you look at the teams that he had signature calls for in 88, 2008, and some of those great teams that didn't make the Final Four or cut down nets, but had some of the greatest individual athletes in the history of Kansas basketball. And he got to tell their stories, and he did it so well. There's a broadcasting term that I reference a lot called climbing the ladder. And what I mean by that has nothing to do with your job, career, flight, or path. It's about your voice. And in those big signature moments when you have to elevate and project while not going over the top, those that climb the ladder well, their voice doesn't crack, they don't scream, they just capture the enthusiasm and the passion and the excitement in the arena while elevating their voice. And he does it as good as anybody. I mean, his call, the Hawks are cooking. I mean, how great is that stuff, you know? And his dunk calls, his three-point calls at Allen Fieldhouse, when his voice is capturing the 16,300 going ballistic and the majestic play unfolding in front of him, he did as good a job at selling that and creating that in the theater of the mind for the listener's ear across the state as good as anyone ever could have. And whoever fills those mighty, mighty shoes will have a hard time living up to his ability to climb the ladder on those signature plays that, as you know, in the fog happened probably 16 times a half. So
yes.
He was amazing and is amazing. And you're right, excellent storyteller on and off the mic. And for anybody, you know, chasing that job, it's obviously a dream job to work for Dr. Zanger and Coach Bill Self. And I think Coach Beatty's going to get that program rocking and rolling on the football side as well. And to have more than anything, a passionate fan base across the state. You know, whether you're talking to the folks in the metropolitan KC area or, you know, all the way out there in some of the smaller western Kansas towns, they bleed crimson and blue, and the passion is so evident. It's so rabid, and I think that's what makes that particular position awesome, because people are hanging on your every word. They're tuning in 30 stations wide, statewide, across the network, and they're unified with you know, a loyalty to that university and that athletic department that I think is pretty rare, quite honestly, having been around this league as long as I have for 15-plus years now. So, yeah, you're asking me, would I want to come home? Certainly, that's always been a dream. But you know what? I'm blessed to be here, too. And so regardless of what happens in that situation, you know, I'm a pretty fortunate guy to have so many wonderful friends back home in Kansas saying some of those great things you're mentioning, while also being privileged to work here at an institution that I've come to know and love with a lot of wonderful people as well. And more than anything, when you get to do what you love professionally, which I know you can relate to on this way, you're blessed, because no day feels like work when that's the case. And so wherever it is, if you're doing what you love, you certainly count yourself as fortunate and blessed, and that's definitely been my experience.
Well, we'd love to have you back. So if you do come back, we will welcome you with open arms. I'll leave it at that. How's that?
Hey, thank you so much, Wade. And no, I'm glad you brought it up, because, hey, it's obviously something on the minds of a lot of folks right now. And I think more than anything, we celebrate the career of a Kansas broadcast Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
That he and Max, and you look at some of the other guys across the state, that, you know, Bob Fiddler just passed away, some of these all-time legends in Kansas broadcasting. He's right up there with them.
It's funny that you said Hall of Famer Bob Davis, because I actually had this lined up. How old are you, Brian?
I'm 35.
All right. Do you know of a lot of other people that are inducted in their high school sports Hall of Fame? Because, ladies and gentlemen, Brian has been. We were joking about this before we had you on the air today, Chad, Dusty, and myself on the morning show, that, well, first of all, at my high school, I think there's actually some kind of restraining order to where we can't even be within 30 miles of our old high school, so let alone be in the Hall of Fame. But we don't believe that our high school even has a sports Hall of Fame, so thus we don't feel so bad about not being in it. But you were inducted into Topeka West High School Sports Hall of Fame. Man, that's got to be just absolutely mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is when your greatest athletic achievement was averaging about 18 over par in JV golf. I was very fortunate to get to help kind of co-found the play-by-play sportscasting department at the school and broadcast football and basketball and baseball that went on the public access channel there in Topeka. And Corey Wilson, our teacher and department head, was the one that really spearheaded it. I was just a kid that had a dream, and he helped fuel that. But because of that and because of some of the things that I've been blessed to do since I've left, which is crazy to think 18 years ago now. Gosh, I'm getting old.
Yeah. Me too.
Because of that, they were nice enough to welcome me back. And believe me, you go in with the class of guys that have gone on to play D1 hoops and are two-time All-City, two-time All-State, and some of these other guys with much more impressive, incredible athletic prowess and achievement. I certainly felt like I was that Sesame Street skit, one of these things is not like the other, one of these things is not the same. But they were really welcoming, and it was a fun night back in October. I appreciate you bringing that up.
No doubt, man. Okay, last two questions before we let you go. We appreciate your time. I know you're busy. We always end with our off-the-wall questions. I've got two for you today. So you ready?
Sure.
All right, number one. Kansas City Royals on Tuesday night had bark in the park. What that means is that they allow owners to bring their dogs on a leash to enjoy the game at the K. My question to you is, any weird promotional nights in Lubbock, Texas?
Well, we just had that as well, and I'm a huge fan of that because I've got a baseball dog that is named after Ken Griffey Jr., named Griffey.
Oh, nice.
So I love bark in the park. I think that's one of my favorite promotions. You know, they don't do anything too crazy down here. I wish I had a better story for you, but I have to think about that. Because you see them at the minor league parks when they really go all out with some of the promotions and the costume theme nights and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We keep it pretty vanilla down here, and that's not to say they don't do it well, but it's a lot of the same mainline, streamlined stuff you'd see elsewhere. But bark in the park is a good one, so long as you've got the pooper scooper handy and plenty of hydration on hand for these dogs on a hot spring day for some springtime baseball.
I'm not trying to start a controversy, but I strongly believe that this is pet discrimination at its finest. Why aren't there the pet snakes, the goats, the ferrets? That was our Facebook question of the day. We asked people today on our show, what would you like to see the next animal or pet invited to the K? And three people immediately said ferret. So we could have hamsters, guinea pigs, cats, birds, snakes. I don't know what the next one's going to be, but I do know that they'll probably want it on a leash. Now for your final question, and that is, I call it mascot battle. Okay, so you obviously know all about the Jayhawks, Big J, Baby J, and down there at Texas Tech, you have Raider Red, right? Is that what it's called?
Yep,
Raider Red. All right, so what I want to know, and now in a shootout, I don't think the Jayhawks would do very well in a mascot battle, but if they didn't have their weapons, who would win? Umano Umano, Raider Red versus Big J and Baby J. Who you like in that matchup? Handicap it for me.
Wade, you're like the Jim Gray. You don't pull any punches here, man. First you asked me about coming back to Kansas potentially, and now which mascot would win.
You never know what I'm going to ask, man. You never know.
No matter how I answer this, I'm going to get in trouble. I'll say this. Raider Red, first off, was a national champion 2 years ago in that Capital One Bowl mascot challenge, whatever.
Wow.
Now, the key to Raider Red, though, is he always comes out with his guns up.
Yes.
And my signature play-by-play call on any win, let's say we're playing Oklahoma State, it's guns up, cowboys down. That's what we say whenever the game's over and the win is secured.
Nice.
So if you're taking his gun away, obviously, you know, that limits his capabilities because he's the quickest on the draw and he's got a great trigger finger and a great shot. I love the Jayhawk mascot amongst all mascots because it's unique. And in with all due respect to your K-State listeners, in a day and age where there's so many Wildcats out there and so many Tigers out there,
true,
I think uniqueness is to be celebrated. Now, I don't know what kind of fighter they would be in this scenario that you're presenting, some kind of mascot mano-a-mano cage match, but I would think that the quick darting around the arena ability with the wings flying around would probably give Raider Red some fits. So that one might have to be a draw as I politically sidestep the question, but I think they both bring a lot to the table, and I love your creativity in asking.
Oh, thanks, man. And I think you'd be a great guy to call that one. That would be really good. The other thing, I know Kevin Harlan well too. Kevin Harlan would be a perfect guy to call that one with a cage match between mascots. That would be terrific. Maybe we got a whole new reality show we didn't even know that we've started right now. That'd be terrific.
No kidding.
That'd be great.
You think of some of his signature dunk calls, like when somebody brings it in and throws it down with authority and he says, with no regard for humanity. Can you imagine him throwing some of those descriptors and a mascot cage match. I love it. He would be great at that.
I could see him doing that. Baby Jay jumping all over River Raider Red, and oh, that would be a great call. That'd be terrific. Hey, man, we appreciate your time as always. Like we said, we'd love to have you back here, but if not, we know you're doing a great job down at Texas Tech. Thanks for the time, buddy. We'll be in touch, and best of luck this upcoming sports season.
Well, Wade, thank you for having me on. It was a privilege. Really proud of your success, an old friend, and anytime, I'm honored to get to come on with you.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of Texas Tech men's basketball and baseball, here on the Sports Ticket.